Hello and welcome to another episode of Mike M's Weekly Reads. Talk a little bit about the Penguin Random House week two. Went to the comic shop and he had, I think it was eight boxes, maybe seven boxes, 7.5 boxes, and only had, I don't know, about 30 damaged that he reported back. He had a good week. So most of those boxes were sellable. However, when I went and listened to Brightside Chat, the one of the guys owns Arkham Comics and Games in Texas. I don't know whereabouts Texas, but he said he had 90% damages. So I guess it's just he was safe last week. My store wasn't safe. It was also interesting how in the Bleeding Cool, Treading, what is that guy? Windmills or whatever. They stole my picture that I took at Ed's Cards and Comics. They didn't like reference it. They just used it as an example. So in all fairness, it's out there, but I thought it was interesting. The drama continues. My comic shop owner said next week they're expecting boxes within boxes. The more I look into the design, it looks really hard for a packer to get it right, because the especially with the C7 box, the C5 box, it's not as deep, but a C7 box is really deep. So if you think about the engineering, if you and the amount of wiggle room on the sides, which isn't a lot. If you place the books like at a certain angle, or if one book gets misplaced and slides, it causes damage to the rest of the books. And it just seems like a really hard situation to get your books out, without a lot of damage, or to get them in. Like if I was packing them myself, I would be nervous about it without any kind of protection. My shop, though, did get annihilated on Spider-Man, which was really bad for him last week because he had a lot of ratio variants. He had like the 1 in 25, the 1 in 50. He might even had a 1 in 100, and none of them were really sellable. There was one that you could maybe pull off, but not to a collector that wants a ratio variant that high. So it was like bent cover, and the left side had dings on it, so it was like bending in, so you couldn't even sit flat. But for a ratio variant like that, and if there are a lot of books damaged, it might make the collectability of that book really high. When you think about it, because if a lot of them are damaged and you're able to get like one of them, that's in decent shape, it could drive up the cost significantly, especially if you go into the grading scenario. The other thing I want to talk about briefly is because it's Halloween, today we're going to see Michael Myers Kills, Halloween Kills, or whatever it's called. And I'm wearing my Michael Myers shirt. And my name is Michael Myers, so it's all appropriate. I watched a lot of horror movies this month, which has been fun. On the elliptical, once I finished Who Killed Sarah, I started watching horror movies. I watched Spare Parts, which was based on a Behemoth comic book, which is more like post-apocalyptic horror, because they cut off appendages of these women and they capture them. So that's what Spare Parts is about. That one I actually had to buy. But the interesting thing about Spare Parts was the Behemoth comic only covered the beginning and there wasn't a next issue. It was a one shot. So it's like if you want to continue the story, I've never seen this done before, except since Malibu did that one video cassette with what is that guy's name? God dang it. It's not hardcore. Firearm. There was Malibu had a comic book called Firearm back in the day, which had a video cassette that continued. Actually, you start with the video cassette, and I think you read the comic, or maybe it was vice versa. But if you wanted to finish it, you had to go to the video cassette. I don't think this has been done since then. At least I can't think of an example. If you think of any examples where you got a comic book, and then to continue the story, you had to get another media piece. Maybe in a video game, there's examples with all the prequels. Trying to drink a lot more water because my hamstrings have been muscle cramps lately. It's just very interesting. I've done a lot of horror movies. I watched all of the Blumhouse exclusive to Amazon Prime movies, which was a lot of fun for me. And I watched a movie called Devil's Island. That was really weird movie. That is about two grandparents that get they own like this. There's a bunch of little island properties in this particular area, and you have to actually boat to get to the properties. And they get what you think murdered, but it really doesn't tell you how or why or anything. And the granddaughter and the father inherit the property, and the granddaughter's from Vegas, and she goes out there in isolation, and she's treated like crap by all the locals. They don't want this outsider from Vegas in their property. But it's got like really suspenseful things. It's got like horror of isolation. It's got like shots where she goes out 'cause she hears a noise, and then the camera pans back into her house and you'll see the light on. And then you'll see somebody moving and you're like, holy fuck, ah! But it has the weirdest fucking ending I've ever seen in a movie. And I had to digest it a lot, and I had to go Google and see what other people thought of it. And a lot of people hated the ending. But I think it's very imaginative because of what it does. I give it a lot of props. But that movie had my interest the entire movie. It was really well done. That was on Amazon Prime. The other ones I watched in the order that I watched them was Bingo Hell. This is a Blumhouse movie released to Amazon exclusively, and it's about a town that is looking. It looks like people are trying to buy sections of it from the older people, and the older people are starting to die out and they're losing their neighborhood. And the only thing they have is each other and bingo. So friendships are formed. Well, this evil entity, a supernatural entity, enters the town, and he's kind of like a soul stealer and a wish giver. And all hell breaks loose, and it's up to Lupita and her friends to drive off. One of the things I liked about these horror movies is the wide range of diversity that were offered. At Bingo Hell, it's older characters, and the lead female is Hispanic, which I really liked. Manor is a terrifying look at. Well, I'll go back into the order I watched. The Black as Night is about an African American girl that lives with her father and her brother, and her mother became a drug addict, centered around something that happened around Katrina, and they're losing their home and some other things that happened, and she turned to drugs, and she lives in a old apartment complex that's known for drugs. And she goes to see her mom there a lot, and there's a lot of death lately of homeless people. And it's pretty much a African American version of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, because she does get bit, but I guess it doesn't get bit to infect her. Like the vampire blood didn't get to swap in; it just was drawn out because somebody came to her rescue, and because her of the death of her mom, she becomes a real obsessed with becoming a vampire slayer. And that one was entertaining, but it fell into the mold of, yeah, I've seen this kind of thing before, you know. But it was really well done. I was never bored. I was entertained. And then I watched Madre, and that one really surprised me, based on a true story. And then Manor, which really surprised me. I wasn't crazy about the ending, but I liked the ending because I didn't expect the ending. So I appreciate that. It wasn't the ending that 90% of the people want, but it's an ending that they deserve. No, I'm just kidding. It's an ending that I can see happening. So I told you what Bingo Hell is. Black as Night is kind of like a vampire war is brewing in New Orleans, and this one girl is there with a couple of friends to stop it as vampire hunters. And then Madre is about a farmer that's from Mexico. He married a Hispanic woman from Los Angeles, and she's a writer for a paper. But they had to let her go because she just got pregnant. And he just got promoted as a manager on a new farm. So they move out to this really small part in the country in LA to do farming. And the guy who hires him really wants his lead farmer to be Mexican or Hispanic and know the language really well, even though he's of Mexican and or Hispanic heritage. And his wife didn't embrace the culture. His wife was raised like me. I come from an Hispanic culture where my parents spoke or understood Spanish, but they didn't teach it down. And it was used more like a secret code to talk around us. But that's the way the wife was, you know. And they move out there, and there's a bunch of supernatural things. But are they really supernatural? And then if you stay till the end of the movie, like it has an ending, and you just stay watching, you see all of you start seeing news clips, and you see like a news headline news story, and based on what this is, and it makes you just like swallow and say, oh my God, this is true horror. Not the the supernatural element to the story, but the actual things that happened and what inspired this movie is horrific. Absolutely horrific. That was my favorite one. Manor was my second favorite one, and that one had me like I really enjoyed that. That was a woman that sort of checked herself into a elderly care facility because she started having a strokes and stuff, and she didn't want to be a burden to her grandson and daughter, because she loved her grandson. Like her and her grandson were best friends, and they get there, and there's also some weird supernatural shit there that goes on. And then the twist at the end, you'll be like, oh shit. You'll either be pissed because it's not the ending you want. But you'll be surprised because it's a different ending. So yeah, that's been going on, and I'm watching Wolf Creek 2, which happens back in the outback. It's based on a true story about missing people, and then it exaggerates it by introducing a killer out there. And this is the second one, also playing on Amazon Prime, and I'm about halfway through. Really enjoyed that. I even forgot like my half hour mark and went 45 minutes this morning. So that's sort of what I've been up to. As far as I still have the Comixology Unlimited free view. It started off with 7 days and then it extended another 30. And I have to cancel it if I don't want it, but I'm thinking of keeping it 'cause it's so cheap. And there's a lot of exclusive stuff on there. And I did read, even though I have the singles, I read Batman the Max or the Max Batman with Sam Keith. Finished that up. It was really, really good. Really enjoyed it. A couple of Kickstarters I've gotten. This one's like huge magazine format. It's Recovery Incorporated. It's like a mystery action crime noir, and then Dirty Works Crossroads from No Sleep Evolution. And I did read the first one and liked it. I like everything for Evolution. Matter of fact, I hope they're like Advent Publishing and they actually start getting some of their books solicited in previews. With people leaving comes opportunity. So we'll see how that goes. I wonder how IDW thinks of Penguin Random House now. I did hear that a couple of shops that stayed with Diamond got their Marvel books, and it was, as usual, much better than Penguin Random House. So, yeah, we'll see. We'll see how all that interesting things pan out. I was looking at the Hot 10 this week, and there was a comic book that I usually get, the boom box called Misfit City, and it's going to be on HBO, and it's been going from $50, and I don't have it. That's weird. I usually get all the boom box. I was also surprised to see Avengers 257 is so expensive. $600, 9.8 sales, 350 for a 9.6, 150 for a 9.2. That's just crazy. That's like a brand new one, and it's all because of Nebula. I own that one. I own a lot of Avengers. Fantastic Four 67 I own. That's the first appearance of him, who's Warlock. Convergence number 2, that's the first appearance of John. That one going up because he re recently announced he's bisexual. I don't know how I feel about that because I actually don't care, but it seemed kind of forced. But I start to think and process this a lot. But I have friends that were married to women and now are with men. So going bisexual or gay late in life is a common occurrence. And being in love with someone could happen. Like it could happen and change your ideas. So I'm more open to it. Like I'm not crazy about it. And that being that he's bisexual, it leads a writer to be able to take it in either direction in the future. So I think it's interesting, and that leads to Superman Son of Kal-El number 2, which is the first appearance of Jay Nakamura. So I have that because I think since I don't know what year. Probably around 2015, I've been buying all the DC comics, maybe 2011. Bloodstone number 1. This one I bought a long time ago, and it's crazy how that thing has gone. You know, near mints are going for 300, 350, 98, 800. So I have that. I do have two copies of Killadelphia number 12, Todd McFarlane variant, which is now going for 35 to 40. I've been trying to get every Todd McFarlane variant that I could possibly get, And I did get those Killadelphias. Probably now's a good time to offload at least one of them. But I just love Todd McFarlane. That's like an obsession with me. And then of course I have Sega number one, and that's going crazy. 800 plus for a 9.8, insane, and it's coming back. So a lot of announcements. Hawkeye Blind Spot. First appearance of Hawkeye's older brother. They're thinking it might be a something to do in the new series. This one I don't believe I have. I think I skipped out on that one. I think I did read it though digitally because it looks familiar. And the one that I really want is this Punch number 12, A Golden Age. God, the cover is just amazing sauce. But 4.0 sold for 3,600, so that was pretty interesting. I like when a lot of these aren't ratio variants. Like there is a Gun Honey ratio variant, 1 in 500, which is a beautiful cover. We're going to be covering Gun Honey on an upcoming a Geek Brunch, but there's that variant and the Department of Truth 13, which I'll never get those variants, but even though I did get the Todd McFarlane variant, I can't remember if that was open to order at the time, but I did get it. I will pay extra for a McFarlane variant if I can get a hold of it, if it's not outrageous. So having said that, I'm going to jump into a few listener questions. I'm almost running out, so please send me. I got distracted because Nick Wetmore just said he's enjoying the new episode of Geek Brunch Retro with Chris and me, but he's missing Rob Krieger in absence. He has the lover boy gif of the guy's ass and the red leather pants with the fingers crossed, because I did think I sang some lover boy because Rob was working for the weekend. Always thought that song was everybody's working during the week for the weekend, that's what it's supposed to be, but I always interpreted it wrong, like you have to go in for the weekend. So I can't remember when that came out, but I think I was working at McDonald's and it felt like I was always working weekends, so I was working for the weekend. Not to be free for the weekend, which I think it's intent. Where to? Okay, so what I usually do is I put those in bookmarks. And I've been bookmarking movies lately. There's a Kate Beckinsale show called Guilty Party. I want to see that just to remind me. And there's a George Clooney and Ben Affleck movie called The Tender Bar, which is a feel-good movie, which I want to see. I think my parents would like that. They like feel-good movies, so I'm gonna point that out to them. I might not have any questions. Hold on. Thought I had a few left. Okay, there is one from Nick Wetmore, and he says, "Mike, here is your rank 'em. Here are three choices of comic book genres that aren't your mainstream popular. I want you to rank them in the order you think might make a comeback in popularity. Also, what you do you think it would take to bring them back into the mainstream?" And he does Western, war, and romance. I think all of these will struggle because of the multimedias that they're in. I think Western has the best chance of those three genres. War would be the next one, and then romance would be after that. There has been a lot of World War II comic books, but not ongoings lately. So that has had a resurgence. There's been a lot of westerns, but usually you have to go outside of previews to get a lot of the westerns, and you have to go to Kickstarters to get your westerns. In terms of who I think would be back first, I think Jonah Hex would be back first. And in terms of DC, I think Jonah Hex has had a cult following and enough to be profitable, but not be real profitable, or else it'd still be coming out. But I hope that that comes back. I saw that movie a second time, and I sure liked it a lot more the second time than I did the first time. Even with the supernatural elements, because if you did read Tim Truman's and Hex Vertigo titles, they were supernatural. The Worms and Such, and there was another one. There were two that I remember, but those were entertaining. So I think westerns have a chance to come back in comic books. No, I'm gonna switch because you say rank them in the order you think might make a comeback in popularity. War has better chance. There's writers like Garth Ennis, who's always putting out War out of the blue, from Aftershock, other stuff that War comics that you can usually get a hold of. There's Dead Reckoning that publishes War comics and previews. There's usually a World War II. I recently got a World War I comic book about trench warfare from French soldiers that was in Caliber. So they're out there. And I think there's a lot of supernatural war stuff that's coming out. There's one called Out from AWA, which is a concentration camp. And there's some infested vampires in there. So there is a DC versus vampires. Oh, that's horror, though. That's not even war. What am I doing? I guess I got confused with the one Out comic book and then started to take it down another genre. Westerns, I think, would come back next. In terms of comic books, man, they're you either see from Marvel a mini series every now and then about Rawhide Kid, or you see a Jonah Hex comic book. But it would be awesome if we'd see something, an All-Star Western or something, to come out, 'cause I miss them. Romance, I don't think we'll ever see romance comics again. But there are romance comics out there, and they're usually in the form of Image. There's a lot of slice of life comic books that are romance. I just read one called Passion Fruit, which involved a watermelon, but that was a Kickstarter. So there are romance comics out there. You could find them on Kickstarter. You can find them at Image. Swing is about a bunch of swingers. There's a bunch of them that, let me see, Swing. Matt Hawkins does a lot of these titles, and so does, God, I can't think of his name now. I can't think of the other one. There's another, oh, Sajic. Linda Sajic and the other Sajic. I can't remember his name, but they do a lot of romance, relationship, sexual type comics that you can check out, and they come out regularly. Like Swing is like already on like a bunch of volumes, and I can't remember what the other one's called. But those are two interesting romance comics that you can check out. I wish I had the other title. What is the romance? Let me see if I can find it. Sajic Comics. Sajic. Stefan Sajic. Sajic Romance Comics. Let's see if I can type that. Sunstone. That's the one that. I was thinking about. So that one has gone quite a way. The other things you can find is Archie, but they're mostly one shots, and those are sort of like romance comedy, and they're the 2.99 ones that come out. There's the horror line that we usually get like a one shot here and a one shot there. I don't know what their story is. They're investing a lot in TV right now, and they've sort of put their comics line on hiatus. You can only just get the digests and the big books and the collections, and usually there's one or two comics they solicit, but they're all going in the vein of Xenoscope, which is kind of done in one stories. I kind of like it, actually. It's kind of neat. It's kind of neat that there are publishers that are doing that. A really good romance comic that is probably the best one ever to come out is True Story, Swear to God by Tom Beland. That was amazing, and there's a story behind that. I would have never discovered this book except Tim Terrell of Tim's Quarter Bin, and he did another podcast. I can't think of what it was. But they involved like random comic reviews, and he had like a very dark sense of humor to him, which were really fun. And I listened to his podcast pretty much regularly. This was around 2007, 2008, I think that it happened, maybe 2009. But he had a team up with me and Derek Coward to talk about some random comics. And it was a podcast. I don't even know if I can find it anymore. I hope I can find it. I will re-release it, but it consisted of two episodes, and it was just a bunch of friends getting together to talk about two random issues. And we really loved Two Story Swear to God, and it was a random issue that Tim had found and sent us each a copy, because that was a hard copy to get a hold of. That was before True Story Swear to God ended up in Image. I can't even remember who the publisher was at the time. AIT Planetar, maybe? I don't remember. But we did this podcast, and coincidentally, Tom Beland listened. And that was fascinating because that was the first time a creator in my podcast had ever reached out to me and said, "I loved your guys' podcast. I would like to come on the show." We didn't even have a show. It was just like a done in one thing that we did. But we ended up interviewing Tom Beland, and we had a great discussion with him, and it got me to read more Tom Beland. And this story is about how he met his wife, and they're since divorced, which is tragic in in the whole thought process because of how much they loved each other. But Tom is pretty dark. I mean, he's got a dark side to him. And Lily is a very strong woman, and I think while they still love each other, they were just headed in different paths. But it's a story of a man who goes to Disney World and meets Lily on a park bench, and it le eventually leads to them getting married and him moving out of his element, which was in California, Napa Valley, to Puerto Rico, where she's from, and him having to deal with like the culture difference and everything. It's an amazing romance comic. I'd highly recommend it to anybody that wants to go down that. So, yeah, they're out there. You just have to search for them. There's probably a couple other. So there's sort of a resurgence, and I guess you can say that Top Cow has the biggest romance comic selection with Swing and their BDSM title, Sunstone. And Linda Sajic has a book that came out of that. I can't remember what it is. Huh. Yeah, there's a lot of erotic romance titles that are out there for sure. I don't think we'll ever see them like they were, like sort of like Dear Abby story comics ever again. But we do see some reprints every. There was a Kirby romance reprint that was put out there fairly recently. So that's a good question. So I'm going to. How do I do this again? Remove that question from the list because I took care of it. And Drew says from Comics for Fun and Profit. Nick is from the Nerdy Legion. With the new Moon Knight out, do you have a favorite story arc or run across the volumes you've read in the Moon Knight collection? I have every single Moon Knight, including his first appearance. I've read 80% of it, of all the Moon Knights. But I would have to be honest with you. My favorite Moon Knight is the most popular Moon Knight, which is the 1980 to 1984 series by Doug Monk and Bill Sienkiewicz. And then the other one, I think, is called Mark Spector. I can't even think what it is. Maybe I'll run across it. Maybe it's not called that, but I know it was that in the title. Oh, it was called The Fist of Khonshu. It was the second volume. Yeah, this is the one I really loved. I love the art in it. I just thought it was cool. And it had like a lot of Egyptian stuff going on in it. This one I really liked. It wasn't a lot of issues. It was only 6 issues, but it was really cool. So the two first volumes is where my heart is with Moon Knight. And then you got into the mini series, which is the third and fourth volume. They were 4 issues each, 3 issues here. I haven't read those yet. And then you get into the weird stuff with the Charlie Houston, David Finch. I like that, but it took him a long time to walk across the room. The Bendis one is when he started to lose his shit and think he was every Avenger. I like it, but I don't like Cuckoo Moon Knight. Like, I like the multiple personality thing. Then the Warren Ellis. The Warren Ellis, I did not like it as much as everybody else did. Those were like done in one stories. Art Delkin Shalvey. And then the Jeff Lemire Moon Knight. I haven't actually read that one yet, to be honest with you. That's one I should look at, the Jeff Lemire, Greg Smallwood. And then the Jed MacKay, which is the current one. And the Alessandro Cappuccio. There's a lot of cover ones. Oh my God. Just looking at the database here. Speaking of, my virus protector thought Comic Base's sidekick was a Trojan and removed it. So now I have to reinstall it. Sidekick is an app which constantly communicates with Comic Base's website to back up my database to the cloud. It's used for selling if you ever try to sell to Atomic Avenue. It's used for getting updates whenever there's an update available. Like every week, there's like maybe two, three updates. Cover downloads. It backs up your data to the cloud, and it also compresses your database for optimal performance in the background. And my virus protector, when I upgraded, I didn't go into the trusted apps and add it in there with the 2021 archiver and say, okay, trust this guy. I never did that. So that erased the Sidekick component of it, which means I have to reinstall, which sucks. But I want to make sure, especially the backup to the cloud happens on a regular basis, just in case something happens to my local backups. It's better to be safe than sorry, because that is the most important thing on my computer that I need. So I hope that answers your Moon Knight question. That's volume one and volume two. It might be a lame answer, but it was always my favorite initially. That's why I'm looking forward to seeing the new one to see if they're going the cuckoo route or not. So I can move that to being complete. And see if I have any others. I have one last one. So this is from Dallow Spicer. Question for Mike Myers's weekly reads. What is your top five on your current wants list at the moment and why? That's weird that you asked that. I want to fill in my spawn, which is like 20 more issues, but they're like $200 to $300 each in the area that I need them in. And I haven't pulled the trigger on that yet, so that's one thing that's on my current wants list that's affordable. One of them's like on that cusp of being affordable, but do I really want to do four digits on it? But I, especially after reading the Alter Ego article on Savage Tales, which is the first appearance of Man-Thing. And it's a black and white magazine, and there's only one issue. There's so much historical relevance to that issue. And if you even read like the behind the scenes, which I talk about in the New Geek Brunch segment, which is Fanzine Frenzy, one of my favorite segments now. The reason I like Fanzine Frenzy is because it gives me an excuse to read all the fanzines or articles that are in my fanzines. Or reread them to remember them. And I'm so glad we came up with that Fanzine Frenzy because I'm really excited to see what you think about it. I just uploaded the 5.5 hour episode of Geek Brunch, and I would like to see what some of you guys think about Fanzine Frenzy. But Savage Tales is one I've got on my mind a lot lately. The other one I've been looking at quite a bit is the first appearance of Brother Boot Voodoo. I was just looking at that on eBay just very recently. That one also could be quite expensive depending on the grade. That's Strange Tales 169. What else have I looked at recently? I've been wanting to fill in a lot more of my Hulk issues just for completish the first volume of Incredible Hulk. Like I'm really close to it. I want to do that and then I'll save five that's always on my mind and I'm spending a lot of money on lately is G.I. Joe, A Real American Hero. I neglected the property when it came out because of its linked to the cartoon, which I wasn't interested in at the time. Wasn't interested in Transformers or G.I. Joe, but I am becoming a true fan of Larry Hama and the G.I. Joe comics. So I will say, and I've gotten a lot of the expensive ones out of the way, except for like there are a couple ones that are towards the end that are really expensive, which are gonna cost me money, like the last issue. And I have a lot of the run ones up front, which are a lot of the first appearances, but yeah, that'll be a fun one for sure. So, things that I've been looking to fill: Spawn, G.I. Joe, Real American Hero, the first appearance of Brother Voodoo, Savage Tales, and I can't remember what the other one was. Been looking for a lot of like random issues to fill in on Kiss Psychos or any Todd McFarlane published comic book. So I'm still on that kick. But yeah, I hope that answers your question. Been looking for a lot of comic books lately. Oh, The Incredible Hulk was the other one. Trying to fill that run. But my mood changes a lot. The ones that have been pretty consistent lately are the Brother Voodoo and Savage Tales. Really would like to have that. The other thing that there's like a comic magazine, Skywalled, Nightmare, that I really w been looking at. I've been really wanting to check it out based on the covers and what I've heard other people talk about it. So there's a magazine publisher in the horror genre that also heard about from the article I read on Savage Tales, because it led to talk about, Man-Thing, which was what the main article was about, Roy Thomas and Man-Thing, which led me down Roy Thomas talking about, what could have inspired the Man-Thing, which was the Heap. And then it's like, man, I would like to have the Heap. And then knowing that the Heap moved over to Skywalled for a brief period of time made me really want to track that down and get that out there. So, I may only have time for 1 week of comics because my wife is going to be getting here real soon and we're heading out to see the new Halloween movie. So, let me see if I can bring that up real quick. I'm going to pause this right now. And I'm back. There were no movies watched that week. And oh, I didn't even total these. Hold on a second. And the shows that I probably watched were just continuations of shows, so I didn't mark them up. Harley's barking at me too. So we got 8, 9, 8. That's 10, 8, 18. So that the week of August 16th through August 22nd, I only read 18 comics. This is pathetic. It's pathetic, and I really need to get into the 30 range per week. But it's just, man, work is killing me, and I'm getting too old. My energy levels are not what they used to be, and I do still like to do my walk, and I like to exercise, which I can't read and exercise at the same time, but I can watch TV, so I really gotta try to drop some pounds. Seriously, getting too obese, and my legs are starting to feel it on the walk. So I gotta, in order to keep walking and enjoying my walks, I gotta lose some weight and exercise a little more. But we had 18 comics, 2 Zenoscope, 1 Second Sight, 1 Marvel, 4 Image, 2 IDW, 1 Dark Horse, 5 DC, 2 Ablaze. Good distribution of comics. We'll get into the 3 out of 5s. Let me make sure I'm recording first. And I am recording. I did the pause. So starting at the bottom, we had Lady Freedom number 2. We learned that one of the Lady Freedom teammates' mom is the Black Valkyrie. So she's the bad villain of the series. This is a 3 out of 5. It's sort of mediocre, but it's fun seeing the growth of a series. And the artwork is like an artist that you think has a lot of, capability to grow, but is not quite there yet. So it's fun seeing that. So I'm still on board. I think I have number 3 that just came in recently. We have Masters of the Universe Revelation number 1. You learn about the backstory of Grayskull, which you need for the cartoon. So this is a prequel to the Netflix cartoon, which I enjoyed quite a bit. Defenders number 1. Like, I like the Masters of the Universe cartoon a hell of a lot more than I've liked What If, to tell you the truth. Defenders number 1. The Masked Raider seeks the help of Doctor Strange to stop Zoda, who will bring about the end. Doctor Strange recruits Silver Surfer, Red Harpy, and Cloud to help. All who have been defenders at one point, the more obscure one is probably Red Harpy. Cloud was usually in there around the time that Beast and Iceman were in the Defenders and Gargoyle. So we get to 4 out of 5s. We have oh, I forgot to take credit for one. So add one more to the pile. We had one from Dynamite 1. So that takes me to 19 comics. Woo! This is Red Sonja 1986. Red Sonja is transported back to 1990 1986. By two aliens. They send a killer robot after her, and she defeats it and then goes after the aliens to kill them in the future. She didn't like having being sent back and being a pawn in the game. We have Spawn 320. Cygor and Spawn stop Soul Crusher. He has the opportunity to kill Soul Crusher, but Wanda's ghost stops him. So that's Al as Spawn. And that's his wife, his ex-wife, Wanda, who he loves very much. Static Season 2, Number 2, Virgil's dealing with his parents fighting over the abilities after he defeats Hotstreak when he was trying to destroy their home. Virgil has a confrontation with the kid reporter Darius that used to be his friend. Darius goes to meet another kid that was transformed to a demon and tells them about the army and Holocaust. Virgil calls Curtis Metcalf Hardware for help, and he goes to meet with him, and the cops are there trying to arrest Curtis, which ties into the Hardware series, which is really cool. That was a 4 out of 5. So the 4 out of 5 started with the Red Sonja. Did I forget? I forgot to mention Batman 89. That's the last 3 out of 5. It shows Harvey's rise to power in Gotham. That's Harvey Dent. And how he's against Commissioner Gordon and the Batman. So that was the 3 out of 5. Then we got into the Red Sonja, and then Spawn, and then Static. And then we go into the one shots of Zenoscope, Grim Spotlight, Hercules Payne versus the Scorpion King. Really enjoying these one shots. I'm getting used to the model. Hercules goes through the trials of that Hercules usually has to go through, and if he succeeds, he may lose his loved ones as a Scorpion Queen tricks him. We then have Robin Hood Goldilocks. Robin is having horrible flashbacks of her past and losing confidence, plus Goldilocks. Who appears to be a bad guy and manipulating Robin Hood. So we then have 4 out of 5, the last one, Dark Detective Comics 1040. Bruce turns himself in to the cops. When he is in a holding a drunk, he's holding in a drunk cell. A drunk calls him out as being Batman. When the drunk wakes up, he remembers nothing though, which is good for him. Barbara works to help get Bruce out of prison. Penguin meets with Worth, that rich fucker, the huge one that looks like the Hulk, to say Vile is alive, which was in that story arc. Batman notifies the Langstrom's wife that he is dead. If you don't know who Langstrom is, that's Man-Bat. We have from Ablaze Comics, we have Gung Ho Anger 2 and 3. The kids go back to the outpost and they lost one of their own, Pauline, to the Crusher. The Crusher are those like white wolf-like creatures. They are now grounded, but they want to go back out and bring back a brother of Archer who is innocent. Zack confronts the girl, Celine, that accused him of rape for no reason other than she did not want. She basically did that so she could keep getting drugs from the guy that was raping her. That series is amazing. 5 out of 5. Consistently amazing. Lord of the Flies, Cobra Kai type comic book, which I really like in a post-apocalyptic setting, is the way I like to describe it. Geiger number 5. Geiger and the two kids are brought in this by this organization. The two kids are inspected for health reasons, and the little boy is contaminated and set to die. His sister will not let that happen, so they're trying to get them out before they actually kill the little brother because he's infected with some disease and they don't want him. The Crow Life 2 and 3. I was not crazy about the first one, but man, this series grew on me. The Crow, which is Null, and Benga are framed for murder of their coworker at the freak show. Get revenge on the sheriff and the cult that is going after their friends, which are friends of the freak show at the circus. It is amazing. Crow series. Really like that one. Carmen, number 1. Carmen deals with the Karma Corporation for failure to transform Cat quickly. Cat learns Zisco, who was her boyfriend, really loved her, and it just is tearing her apart. Radiant Black number 6 focuses on the Red Radiant and how she fell into trouble because her awful husband that ran their lives and finances into the ground. 5 out of 5. Superman 1 and 2. This is the John Byrne Superman. Superman has run in with Metallo and finds he is. I read this for like the fifth time for a podcast. He is weak with kryptonite for the first time. And Luthor is monitoring the situation. He finds out about kryptonite. Luthor stops Metallo from killing Superman because he wants to do it. Takes that kryptonite out of his chest to make a ring. Luthor is using his assistant to find out who Superman is. She determines it's Clark Kent, but he does not believe her because he's like, how could this be so obvious? This guy's a god, and why would he make himself a reporter? She is forced to go out on a date with Luther and later learns he fires her. That's the scientist that went out. He's mad at her, but then he uses his power to force her into a date, which is really creepy, really creepy. Lucky she is not dead this issue, as Luther usually kills any of his staff. Number 2 is an amazing Lex Luthor issue. On that note, I want to thank you for listening. You can reach me at mike@comicbooknoise.com on email, the snail mail, or the electronic mail. If you want to reach me at Twitter, at Mike Myers Brunch. You can find me at geekbrunchpodcast.com. You can go to Facebook at Geek Brunch Podcast. Click the like button. Follow all the episode threads there. And I want to thank you for listening. We're now on Spotify, so enjoy. We'll talk to you later. You can also ask Alexa for Geek Brunch Podcast, and she'll play you the latest one. So talk to you later, and peace out. Enjoy your weekend, guys. Bye.